Hello and welcome. This is Francis Wade and this is the Two Time Labs podcast. So the question of the day is, how can you upgrade your skills at using a calendar or a schedule? Are there any benefits from using your calendar or schedule or just as an appointment book? Should you make the change? Well, here to answer the question along with me today is Mark Horseman. Mark, welcome to Two Time Labs podcast.
Thank you, Francis. Happy to be here.
Super. And Mark, just so I can fill in our listeners a little bit, you're the owner of the manager-tools.com website. It's a very powerful resource for managers and executives. You're also a graduate of West Point.
Yes.
Which sort of makes me get very humble and very quiet. Because
beat Navy.
Oh, the Navy. Okay.
No, beat Navy, I said.
Oh, beat Navy.
Yeah.
Gotcha. You're also a former executive at Procter & Gamble.
Yes.
And your company is very prolific. You put out at least 2 podcasts per week. Did that capture sort of the highlights of your expertise and career?
Yes, I think so.
Excellent. And now, the reason I invited you on, as you know, is you've done a series of podcasts that have looked at, in particular, how to use your calendar and your schedule in a way that really flies in the face of the conventional wisdom. So for those who are listening in, I really want this to be sort of an advanced conversation in how to manipulate your schedule, because there is a very popular sort of idea out there that it's a bad idea to put anything other than an appointment in your calendar or schedule. And if you do that, you're going to blow up.
Yeah.
Isn't that right, Mark?
Yeah, I've heard. I mean, certainly one of my favorite business books of all time is David Allen, Getting Things Done. And I generally revere what David has done. And we disagree on this point. And I'll tell you why in a nutshell.
Please.
A great majority of the guidance on time management starts with the principle of let's get more efficient. In other words, if you had a box full of balls and you wanted to put more balls in the box, what the efficiency people would say is, let's turn all the balls into little cubes, because that way they'd all fit perfectly right next to one another. And that's efficiency, meaning, well, if we did that, we could get more balls or more cubes in the box. But that's not the problem that most people have, particularly for the kind of audience that you have, Francis. The problem is not efficiency. The problem is effectiveness. The question is, are we doing the right things? Are we spending time on the right things? There's an assumption, and don't get me wrong, if this assumption is true, then trying to get a little bit more efficient is good. And the assumption that a lot of time management people have is that everyone already knows what they should be doing. They're working on the correct things with the correct amount of time on each one, and they have already made the decision about how much time should I spend on all these things and what's my ratio of this versus that and so on. Well, if you've got the big picture right, if you know what you're supposed to be doing, that would be effectiveness, then sure, a little bit more efficiency would be great. But that's not the problem for the average manager or executive. It's just not.
Yeah.
In fact, there are so many people. Let me put it this way. I think probably there's an assumption that 60 to 70% of the people in professional life have fairly and accurately analyzed what they're supposed to be working on and then essentially are moving stuff around in order to get the maximum amount of time out of their day. I believe that's false. I believe the number is closer to 20%.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying, again, I agree with David Allen on the principle that, hey, let's get more efficient. But when I'm in a bad mood, I say, yeah, but if you're headed in the wrong direction, being more efficient will only get you there faster, which is not where you want to go.
Right. Stephen Covey.
Yeah.
Wall, the ladder of success only to find that it's leading against the wrong wall.
Yeah, exactly. It's the whole leadership versus management thing. Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we simply recommend that, and by the way, David Allen also says don't put it on your calendar, which makes sense in one way, but the fact is the vast majority of professionals that I know use their calendar simply as a place to capture meetings. I have to be at this meeting. But the calendar, that's an abomination of your pardon. That's too big a word, probably. It's an abomination of the calendar. A calendar exists to allow us time to accomplish the things we're supposed to accomplish. Now, I don't think you have to put everything on your calendar. There are people who overschedule and they have 15 minutes for A and then B and then C and they have nothing but nonstop appointments on their calendar, even if those things are with themselves. I'm generally a believer in you got to leave some free time on your calendar. In fact, I think we put a podcast out that said 30% of your calendar ought to be free.
But, oh, really?
Yeah, oh, sure, because if you don't have 30% free, if you're fully engaged, think about your typical day. If your day's anything like mine, you're a consultant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the phrase that's popular now is emergent, which is another form of the verb emergency, right? stuff happens, right? Things change. Everybody's got a plan in a boxing match until they get hit. And so that's why we just recently did a cast about how even if it's not scheduled, the one or two most important things you have to get done in a day, which in fact often are not scheduled but are tasks that you have to accomplish, try to get those done before noon. Because it's been our experience with executives, and I probably coached, I don't know, a couple thousand executives over the last 25 years. It's been our experience that if you don't try to get it done by noon, it's not going to get it done. It's not going to get done by the end of the day.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I actually just read some research done by a legal academic, mm-hmm. about how lawyers use their time. And she says a lot of them simply just start replying to email as soon as they get up. And they spend the rest of the day chasing down email after email after, sort of an advanced version of ping pong all day.
You know what's interesting about that, Francis, is you say that and people are going, oh my gosh, that sounds terrible. But I have to tell you, that is most professionals' daily lives.
Yes.
And about the only people that I'm reasonably sure are not behaving that way are very senior executives. Now the average person says, well, the senior executive has different problems. No, he or she has different problems because they've learned email is not the answer. I was just in Houston with, in fact, a bunch of corporate lawyers, as it is, and I said to them, I said, your calendars are crap. And they laughed a little bit, and I said, no, really, I mean, I've watched you guys work. One of the things we like at Manager Tools is having data, so we've watched managers and executives work, and what most people do is exactly what that research says. They come in, the first thing they do is check email, and then I joked, I said, I know what you do when you get done with a meeting. If you have a half an hour between meetings, you walk back to your desk, log into your computer, and check mail.
You're checking email.
Yeah.
You don't even wait till you get to your computer because you whip out your iPhone and on the way walking back to your office.
Yes, you're right.
Things have changed. Yeah. Great. How wonderful they are.
Yeah. And look, I get 400 emails a day and I get it all done in an hour and a half. Mm-hmm. I do it first thing in the morning, middle of the day, end of the day. Nobody complains. And by the way, my company has an email culture just like everybody else's. And it's simply a matter of saying if you give something that takes a lot of your time, which in this case is email, if you give it an unlimited amount of time, in other words, it's not scheduled, so therefore it's unlimited, it will take an unlimited amount of time. And I tell people all the time, just schedule time for it. And if you have 100 emails and you have 30 minutes and you say to yourself, I have to get this email done, people will get 90 to 95% of that email done. And suddenly they go through their day not feeling this low-grade sort of anxiety about, oh, I've got to keep up with email. And
you know, it's so true. Yeah. That's what you call the reverse of Parkinson's Law. Did you know one of your podcasts?
Yes, that's right.
If you set a certain time to get a task done, you will get the task done more likely than during that time, just because you have to.
Yeah, as I recall, you're in Jamaica, right?
That's right. Yeah. Yes.
Well, I used to, when I had time before the company got too successful and ate my life, I used to go sailing in the British Virgin Islands. I would take 10 days or 2 weeks. My family and I would go. We would charter a boat and we would sail around. And I took every summer 2 weeks, sometimes in the winter. And everybody knows the experience of the day before they go on vacation. Having to feel like I've got to get a bunch of stuff done because I can't be working hard the first few days of my family vacation. And they get a bunch of stuff done right before they go on vacation because they're not going to miss the plane flight with their family. And the reason why is because they have put, finally, they've put a hard stop on their workday, on their work life. And they've said, I got to get all this done. I'm going to be gone for 2 weeks. I got to delegate this and this and this. I got to assign this to that person. And it's a little bit sloppy maybe, but it gets done, and people go on vacation. And that's because they put a hard stop to things. And the vast majority of people, if they would simply decide, I'm going to work on these five things,
yes,
and these three things I would love to work on, but I don't know that I can, and then put time on their calendar for those things, not too much. I mean, look, don't schedule more than 90 minutes, because if you schedule more than 90 minutes, first of all, you won't be attentive enough during that time. Secondly, people are going to start feeling like that's too long if there's nobody else on your calendar during that time, meaning you're not at a meeting, and people will start attacking it. And,
right.
And know what you're supposed to be working on and get those things done. Simple.
That's absolutely right. It echoes what I've seen in the corporate world also. And, you know, when I leave my training and I tell people one of the most important things that you're not doing is sitting down each day to plan the day. People look at me with a blank look.
Yep.
As if, who has time for that?
Yeah.
And it, of course, leads them to run around the whole day like chickens with their heads cut off. Because, but at the same time, the conventional wisdom says that you cannot do that. Instead, the conventional wisdom says the best that you can do is make a list, a really long list.
Yeah.
Maybe divided up by context, but it's going to be long anyway. And as you go through the day, you go back to your list and simply decide what to work on next. Now, why doesn't that work?
Well, there are a couple of reasons why it doesn't work. I mean, I don't mind lists in and of themselves. I think, well, getting things done, I use OmniFocus, and I have a list of things I need to get done. But what ends up happening with a list is, again, we have a fundamental argument between effectiveness and efficiency. Anybody who has a really long list, if it's long enough, the list is decaying. All lists decay very rapidly, and the longer the list, the greater the stuff at the bottom decays. Now, what I tend to see is the people who make lists are people who are trying to get everything done. And if they look at their list historically, they will discover that they didn't get everything done. And so a lot of the time spent on the list was wasted in that there's a bunch of stuff in that list not getting done.
Right.
Even if they do have context, they tend to be less respectful of priorities and rather more respectful of, I have a lot of small tasks to do. And if you're doing a lot of small tasks, I can't remember the name of the book, but it was a number of years ago where they talked about A-level tasks and B-level tasks and C-level tasks.
A bunch of them.
Yeah, you tend to do... You tend to have a lot of C-level tasks on your list. And you end up confusing activity. Boy, I got a lot of things done today. I checked a lot of things off my list with accomplishment, meaning, have I made significant progress toward the key things I'm supposed to do? Now,
yeah.
I also want to say something else. I think you and I are of a like mind on this in terms of efficiency versus effectiveness. The big problem is, one of the reasons people look at you with a blank stare is, it's hard work sitting down and thinking, what is most important? It's hard
work.
It's
easier to respond to email.
It is. It's easier to respond to email. It's easier to make lists. It's easier to feel accomplishment or feel activity day to day by working on small things. We have a podcast where we recommend, simply because almost everyone we know who's highly professional, highly effective does it, is spend some time Sunday night thinking about your week in addition to doing some stuff first thing every morning. Everybody who is really smart about effectiveness at work says you need to have time thinking about what you're going to do before you actually do it. And there's the old saying that, you know, how am I going to have, and I'll never have enough time to do it over if I don't get it done right the first time. Well, there's never enough time for everything. I tell executives all the time, I walk up to their desk, I see their desk and it's covered in stuff, and I say, see those stacks of folders on the back of your desk? The ones with dust around the edge because they've been sitting there for 6 months, and the cleaning guy at night has essentially, they know they're there, they're not supposed to mess with them. You could throw all those away. You can throw all of it away, because if it's been on your desk 6 months, you've just proven that urgent stuff, or whatever tends to come up in, with any given 1, 2, or 3 month period of time, is going to be more important than that, quote, really important project you're going to get to someday, unquote. Mm-hmm. Everyone, when I ask the question, when I'm out with clients, I'll be with one this week, I ask them all the time, raise your hand if you get all your work done every day. No one raises their hand.
No one does.
So by definition, we are all choosing what work to get done. We all are.
We're always choosing every day.
And
there's no escaping the choosing.
I'll tell you one thing that has worked for me is say, look, rather than deciding what you're going to get done, take a look at everything and decide what you're not going to get done. Don't let it be, you could do it just the opposite and end up with a situation where I know these five things I'm not going to get done. And if they've been sitting on a desk for 6 months not getting done, they're not going to get done. And what it does is decide now, I'm not going to get those things done. It frees up what you used to spend in anxiety on those things to allow you to focus on what's really important. Another thing I tell clients all the time is decide what you're willing to get in trouble for. And when people say to me, well, I'm not getting in trouble, what I would say is, well, then, okay, you're probably working on the right things. Do a Drucker time analysis. Take a look at what you've been working on and decide, okay, these are the most important things because I'm not getting in trouble. Once I get them past that, then I say, okay, now, let's stop worrying about what you're going to get trouble for. Now, where are the rewards? What is it you want out of your professional life? What do you believe? Let's take a look at all the buckets you've got to carry around here every day, and everybody has too much to do, and let's pick the buckets that you believe deliver the most value to whomever you believe is going to deliver that value back to you in the form of rewards. And the answer usually is, what are my boss's priorities? What are the key, three or four key things related to my job? You can go about it three or four different ways. But again, going back to our earlier point, there are too many people focused on, I want to get more done.
Yes, absolutely. You know, one of the problems that I've been committed to solving with my clients is what happens after the strategic planning retreats. So they spend the 3 days, they plan this huge strategy, and the executives are all, you know, their minds are filled with visions of cherry blossoms and plum fairies and the whole thing, and they're all excited and inspired. They roll it out to their middle managers, who then go back, and without having the calendar and scheduling techniques that you're talking about, they do nothing differently. They just add it to the list, and they never get to that part of the list until their boss calls them in 9 months' time and says, great, you should be almost done with the strategy, the implementation that you're supposed to have done, right? And you're like, I've been too busy. And they all say the same thing, I've been too busy. And what did not happen is what you're saying. They didn't sit down on their Sunday night or whatever it was and block out an hour each day or two, three-hour blocks during the week to implement whatever aspect of the strategy came out of the retreat. And in the absence of that activity, nothing happens.
Nothing happens. And then the offsite becomes a waste. And they've been a waste so long that now really what most managers know is the one thing the offsite needs to be is a respite or a relaxation or fun away from the office. They've literally become bastardized into, let's just get away from the office a couple of days and think big thoughts, but most of us know we're not going to change things. You know, Peter Drucker, the smartest management guy ever, 20 years ago, I learned something that just my head rang for a week like somebody had hit it with a hammer. And what he says is, a decision is not just a choice. A decision is a choice and the implementation of that choice through activity. And I'll tell you something, when executives send me their offsite plan, Mark, come facilitate an offsite, we need some help, succession planning or talent management or whatever, I spend 2 days doing it. When I look at the calendar, I'm like, well, you can't get all this done. They said, well, we need to talk about all this stuff. I said, well, if you talk about all this stuff, you won't have time to actually plan the implementation. They said, oh, we'll do that afterwards. Well, I said, no, you won't.
Yeah.
No, you won't. So what we do, typically what we do is we cut 40% of their agenda out. We take the 60% we have and we add, okay, we made that decision. Now, what's the implementation? And you can only get about 60% of it done. 40% of the agenda of a 2-day or a 3-day offsite has to be after we make the decision on these 1, 2, 3, 4 things, the implementation of it. And what that means is, you may have listened to our podcast about project management. Who's going to do what by when? Who are we going to assign responsibility for this task? When does it have to be done by? And if you're not doing that, if you are not saying we made a choice and now we have to implement it, people, you're absolutely right. People are going to come back to the office and they're going to get right back into email and they're going to get right back into the same scheduling things. And because they don't have any vehicle to look at their calendar before the offsite and after the offsite and compare, can I see after the offsite different priorities in the meetings that I'm having, the time I'm spending, and so on? If there's no way to do that, then you're wasting time in an offsite.
Oh, that's so true. The sort of the hope is that during the offsite, everyone will somehow mentally commit to it, and then make a mental schedule, and then at the appropriate times during the year, they will absolutely remember what their mental schedule says, and then they'll go and implement. And that just about never happens.
It just doesn't happen. Yeah. I think, and partly because we're all so busy. And the idea that you're going to remember something, now, of course, I'm over 50, and so therefore I don't remember anything anymore. But the idea that you'll remember something 3 months later, because the pool, look, we're all reasonably smart. We have to tell ourselves we're reasonably smart with the kind of responsibilities we have. So our thoughts in our head about, well, I'm reasonably smart. I think I'm doing well. They haven't fired me yet. I have a chance for promotion maybe in a few years. And so what ends up happening is a lot of our self-talk suggests that we ought not to change. Hey, I got where I got. Why should I do it that much differently? And I'll tell you, in the very best companies in the world, the Walmarts and the Procter & Gambles and the Johnson & Johnsons, the Royal Dutch Shell, the IBMs, the GEs, when they sit down and they decide they're going to do X, they then come up with a plan, and then somebody holds people accountable. And if you think you can just go to an offsite and then come back and just keep doing what you're doing, well, we all know the definition of insanity, doing the same thing and expecting different results.
Have you ever had the thought that after an offsite, there needs to be a training session for every manager on how to manage your schedule?
Well, it's funny.
Ideal situation. Never happened yet, but.
Well, I feel like the moment people go back, there's such a pull. Okay. If you go off-site and you sit around and you have good food and you have a pretty view, I mean, gosh, if you're in Jamaica, you'll have a pretty view probably. And if you do that, if when you come back to the office and you're in your cubicle, you're in your office, and you've got stuff in your inbox and you've got paper on your desk, the chance of making a change once you've gone back to the normal context is very small unless you plan for it. And so that's why I say we cut out 40% of the agenda and we put the planning in the offsite itself. And then the senior person says, and I'm going to hold you accountable. And look, if we all had, to your point about a training session, if we all had an individual coach to hold us accountable for the commitments we make, we'd all be doing a lot better. Well, we at Manager Tools, we believe that person is the manager, but it requires the manager knowing what their people are doing. And of course, that's one of the things the calendar does. It allows managers and others to see into your schedule and what's important and what's not.
But accountability aside, isn't there a challenge? And this is what many of the gurus say. They say that it's virtually impossible for you to have a schedule that essentially manages your day. They say it's impossible to sit down, plan your day, put it on paper or put it in an electronic format, and then manage the juggling that needs to happen during the day. The argument is that there's way too much juggling you have to do, and what you put in your schedule, you shouldn't change. That's the argument, right? That the overhead is just too much, and that notwithstanding modern tools, and we don't care if you have an iPad or later, right. It doesn't matter. What's your take on that?
I agree with the principle that the tool really doesn't matter all that much, although ubiquity helps. The idea that I can find my schedule, my calendar, my priorities on my iPad and my iPhone and my laptop and so on. I think that helps a little bit. But I disagree. And I'll tell you why. There are two reasons I'll tell you why. One, the President of the United States does it.
I've used that one before.
I mean, he, you know, the president is scheduling, I used to work in the White House, the president is scheduling 15-minute increments. And he's so busy, of course, and, that one of the things that happens is there's a guy who goes around with him, who's his aide, who has his schedule. And almost every president is famous for learning the phrase, "What's next?" Because the president is so busy, they don't think about their calendar. They think about what they're supposed to be doing. In other words, making decisions, sitting in a meeting for 15 minutes here, 15 minutes there, whatever. Most of us have a good bit of our time thinking about all the things on our calendar. Literally, it's a bit like thinking about driving rather than just forgetting about driving, which we all can do so well, generally speaking, and actually thinking about, okay, what am I going to be doing in this meeting that I'm driving to? So for one thing, and I know many CEOs, senior executives, who absolutely follow their calendar. Now, there are people who will immediately say, well, of course, Mark, that's true, because they have power and they can tell other people, no, I'm going to reschedule, or no, I don't want to do that, or what have you. But they're missing the point. The key to one's calendar is not that the calendar doesn't change. The key thing is the calendar exists for your priorities to be put on it to help you spend the resource that is most precious to an executive or a manager, time, because time goes away. We can't make more of it. Money we can replace, and I hate to say this, people we can replace, time we cannot. The calendar exists for us to schedule our priorities. And this is why when I'm in a bad mood, I say, why are we talking about time management? Time existed before mankind. We're not going to manage time. You can't manage time. You're making choices about what you're going to do, which is a form of priorities. But what we say is this. In a given day, there might be, maybe you have 5 or 6 meetings. You have 3 or 4 other things on your calendar that you need to get done. You're going to have things happen to you. Things are going to get moved around. The key thing is, you move these things around, but if it's on the calendar, it gets done. It stays on your calendar. It may get moved. What everybody else does is essentially abandon all hope and say, well, I can't schedule anything because everything's going to get moved around. Sure, it's going to get moved around. It's not the time you pick that matters. It's the fact that you say you're going to do it, that it's on the calendar, that what's on the calendar at that time is important enough that it justifies you spending your most precious resource on it. And I know all kinds of executives who deal, now the classic example is an executive working with his or her admin where 2 things happen by 10 o'clock in the morning that changes everything. You know, the stock market does X, or right, something happened in Europe, or there's an issue in Asia, and the executive immediately walks out and talks to her admin and says, okay, how are we going to handle this? And the admin says things like, okay, well, we can move the 1 o'clock until 4 if we cut it to 45 minutes. We can do this at this time, and we can get an hour and a half time here for you to meet with your team. And what people say to me all the time is, well, you can't use your calendar because of all these meetings. And, they say, I'm not the one who schedules the meetings. No, you're not. And you can say no to meetings. And people tell me all the time, well, you can't really say no to meetings. Yes, you can. Because I talk to thousands of people every year who are double and triple booked. Well, why bother being double and triple booked? You're saying yes to the meeting, but then you're not going. It's the same thing as if you were going to say no. They say, well, I'm afraid I'm going to get in trouble. I'm going to get in trouble.
Defying gravity.
Right, exactly.
Defying the physical universe.
Yeah. If I have 5 or 6 things on my calendar, then I'm going to get those things done on that day. One might lop over till the next morning. That does happen. Or even maybe a couple of days later, depending upon my schedule and the other person's schedule. What I'm saying is, this has got to get done. It's important enough that this has to get done. But right, the idea that things get messed around and you never know what's going to happen is true, and having priorities on your calendar keep you from getting lost in the maelstrom of being pulled out to sea by a riptide.
Right. Doesn't it also stop you from being overly optimistic and overscheduling? Because if you don't actually confront the 8 or 10 hours that you have in a day, as you start to block the time out on your electronic calendar, you can see, I can't do 4.
Yeah.
I need to do 3. But if you have it, if all you do is, you know, say to yourself and say, okay, I have 3 things to do, 4 things to do today, and you never actually confront the time each of them takes, then chances are you're going to be very disappointed at the end of the day because you would have overscheduled yourself mentally.
Yeah.
Because all you have is a mental calendar if you're not actually creating a calendar. Doesn't it cause that problem?
Absolutely. If you have a list and there is no calendar to speak of, then you're going to have too much to do. You're going to end up with a lot of things not done. Even if you do use a calendar, many people that I know are grossly overscheduled. And their defense is, well, I have to say yes to all these meetings. And I say, well, the meetings start late and finish late, and you end up not going to one or two of them every day. So at some point, you ought to just admit, let's call a spade a spade, that, well, clearly you're not going to everything. Let's cut things back. That's why I mentioned earlier, we recommend, it's not always possible, but for the people that I know who are very good at priority management, they have 30% of their time unscheduled to allow for emergent issues. Another thing, too, I mentioned a Drucker time analysis. If you don't have an assistant, if you can't do it on your own, I think there are some apps actually out there for Android and iPhone that will allow you to keep track of your time. Yeah. The simple way I do it is every 15 minutes, I set an alarm on my phone every 15 minutes. I do this probably once a year, and every time the alarm rings, I write down what I'm doing. And at the end of like 3 or 4 days, I have a really good sense of what I'm actually doing versus what my calendar might have me doing it for some reason I'm not in a meeting.
Right.
And I think that too many people don't know, to your point about overschedule, I don't think they know that they're overscheduling. They feel that they can't get everything done. So therefore, they schedule 6 things when in fact history says they can only do 3 or 4. But because they've always felt like I can't get everything done, they've never experienced the joy of scheduling those 3 or 4 only, choosing now to not do those 1 or 2 that you're not going to get done, and then going home and saying, wow, I got everything done I could get done today. If you spend 6 months living that way, you'll be able to actually add more to do because you won't be in a constant state of anxiety and fretting over,
right,
I don't get everything done.
So as a coach, do you therefore spend a lot of time helping people to refine their scheduling technique?
I do if it's really bad. But generally speaking, the people I'm coaching have assistants and more than 1 or 2 assistants, and they're more like the president in the sense that they have already decided here are the 5 things or the 3 things or the 2 things I'm going to work on, and if you have a really great assistant, and the really great assistants get paid 6 figures, the assistant says to someone, no, you can't have time on her calendar. She's decided these are the 3 big things. And if it's not one of those 3 big things, she's not going to do it. That said, I do recommend one of the podcasts that's very popular. We have a relationship between an executive and an assistant, and we recommend a 15-minute check-in every morning. It's called a stand-up, where the executive and the assistant, or the manager and the assistant, talk about what am I working on, what should I be working on, what are the key deliverables or deadlines that I have today. And I've used this with many people. When a manager actually presents to me with a problem about priority management, I say, okay, you may not have an admin, but the first thing we're going to do every morning, you know, I get in before they do. I'm waiting for them at their desk. And the first thing we do is, hey, let's talk about the day. What deadlines? Yeah. What deadlines do you have? What deliverables do you have? Does your day reflect your priorities? And I say at this point, because it's possible at 2 o'clock, all heck could break loose. It could happen. But let's at least start the day with a clear idea of where we're going. One of the things that both Mike Ozan, my business partner, and I, we're both former military guys, and there's a great military concept called the commander's intent. And the idea is, Francis, if you're my boss, if you're the general and I'm the colonel, when you say to me, okay, Mark, here's what our mission is going to be, you describe it and we get down into details like my unit has to be here at this time and that and so on, here's how the logistics are going to work. But at the end of the briefing, you say to me, Mark, here's what my intent is. Here's the idea that I have that we're trying to make happen. And the reason for that is that if I am put in a situation that I don't have a plan for, if suddenly my logistics are cut off, if suddenly I'm separated from the other units, if suddenly I don't have communications, I know what your intent for me was, and I can make decisions on my own. Same thing is true with our daily schedule. If we don't ever think about what the big picture, what the two or three or four or five things we're supposed to get done are, or what are the things I get really in trouble for at the end of the year that aren't done, if I don't know those things, then I'm going to end up not getting them done.
They're not getting done. Yeah. I'm going to follow the adrenaline. Yeah. I'm going to follow the hottest email that I have in my inbox.
You said the word I was going to say, which is I'm going to do my email, right? You just say, well, I can go and I can get it done. And what's funny is the funny thing about email is that it's a bit like Sisyphus, the guy who in Greek drama had to roll the stone up the hill. And when he got up all the way up, almost all the way up the top, of course, he slipped and the stone rolled back down and he spent his entire life trying to get the stone to the top of the hill. Everybody's trying to chase getting email done and they're not. And they've been doing email for years and they're not accomplishing their goal. They're not getting through all their email. And yet I know thousands of managers at this point in my career, tens of thousands of managers who we've taught the email technique. We have a podcast called Got Email, which basically says allot it some time and force it into that time. You mentioned Parkinson's Law, but Parkinson's Law says work expands to fill the time you have to do it. And if you give it no amount of limit, then it will take an unlimited amount of time. Horstman's corollary to that is work contracts to fit into the time that you give it, if you're willing to give it a certain amount of time. And that's why I know people who get 400 emails a day and finish it in an hour and a half every day. And the only time they do email is early in the morning and then middle of the day and then late in the day before they go home. Not first thing in the morning. Usually you say hello to people and you plan your day and then you sit down and do some email for half an hour. But if I have 50 emails and I have 15 minutes, if I know I'm supposed to get them done in 15 minutes, I'll get them done in 15 minutes. And if I could take away email, I happen to personally love email because I travel so much and that way I can talk to people that, you know, we don't have to be talking to each other at the same time. And yet, if I could get rid of email for a week or two, and there are companies, of course, that do no email Fridays and so on. I think what would happen is people would fill up their calendars or fill up their days, maybe not their calendars, with other things that are relatively low priority to make them feel like they're accomplishing things when in fact all they're doing is being busy and staying active. And it goes back to the fundamental principle. What's your calendar for? It's to reflect your priorities so that every day, you will move closer toward your priorities. But people without a clear understanding of their priorities and without their calendar reflecting it, rather than starting top down, they start bottom up and say, what's my list?
Right, right. Well, what do you say to those managers? There are many, many of them who use Microsoft Outlook who have shared calendars. And before they even walk in on a Monday morning, they're walking into a week that's, for some people, extreme cases, 50% of the time is already so-called booked into somebody's meeting who added them in. And then, you know, they're looking at, okay, I'm already down to 50%. The rest of the time I have to eat lunch.
Yes. Suddenly the 50 is really 75% when you consider eating lunch and going to the bathroom and chatting with people and updating your Facebook page and so on. Yeah.
I haven't even checked email yet. What's the technique that you recommend for those who are in Outlook and they have shared calendars and the propensity to add people into meetings even when they they're of marginal benefit.
Well, first of all, I mean, maybe Outlook has changed. I use Outlook now. Maybe Outlook has changed, but you can't schedule somebody else in a meeting. You can send them a meeting request.
Yes. Right.
And then that person can say no. So my first bit of actionable guidance is say no. Now, I know there are people howling right now. I can't. It's my boss. Well, okay. It is your boss, and if it is your boss, I'm not recommending you say no. But there are a lot of other people scheduling your time that you can say no to. Okay, that's the first thing. The second thing is, okay, Mark, is there anything else I can do? Yes, there's actually something a great deal easier than that. If you look at your calendar this week, you made the point of coming in today and discovering that I've got three or four or five meetings that I hadn't planned on. And again, by the way, I have a videotape somewhere in my office of a person clicking yes to all of the meeting requests they got during a day, even though it's double and triple booking them. And I asked them, you can hear me on the tape, saying, why are you doing that? Well, because I have to. You know, you don't. So you don't have to.
It's a politically correct thing to do.
Exactly. Yes, and it's I'm trying to maintain my relationship with the people. Well, it's great to maintain your relationships and keep your job too. But there's an easier way to do it. If you look at your calendar this week, we're recording this on a Monday. For the most part, most people, if you're listening to this on a Monday or a Tuesday, your calendar today, tomorrow, Wednesday, Thursday is probably somewhat full. Okay? If it's a Monday, when you look at Monday and Tuesday, it's probably pretty full. When you look at Friday, it's slightly full, but you'll know it's filled up. If you look at next Thursday, there's almost nothing on it. So my suggestion to saying no is to be proactive, and that means let's forgive ourselves for the 1, 2, 5, 10, 15 years that we've been doing it wrong, that we've been managing our time, of course not that we manage time, that we've been managing our priorities incorrectly. And let's give ourselves one more month of leeway, one more month of grace. We're going to say, for the next month, I have to live with the life that I've chosen thus far. But a month from now, I'm going to solve the problem. Now, I'm not putting anything off. I'm simply saying, I want you to look at your calendar a month from now and start putting things on the calendar that will allow you to accomplish the things you're supposed to accomplish. So give up the next month, because if you look at your calendar a month from now, there's nothing on it. Nothing.
You haven't got me yet.
Nothing. Everyone else is doing, they're scheduling time because people have free time today, tomorrow, the next day. No one, maybe 1% of the people in your office are thinking a month from now. We have an old joke in my business when we work with senior executives. You know how you know the CEO? He's the one who doesn't have any free time for the next 6 months because they're so busy. When people say, I'm busy, I'm as busy as the CEO. No, you're not. She's scheduled for the next 6 months. You're only scheduled for the next 3 or 4 days. Give up the next month. Start putting time on your calendar, not more than 90 minutes at a time. Leave some free time in there. Put time on your calendar for the things that are most important. And yes, sometimes that will be meetings with the people, but also it'll be time for you to accomplish the things you need to get accomplished. It may include you have a half an hour late in the day to run around and talk to people who owe you stuff. A friend of mine, Jamie Dimon, walks around, he's chairman and CEO of one of the biggest banks in the world, walks around with a card in his pocket which says, in the office, now he's the chairman and CEO, and he said, this piece of paper in his pocket says, people who owe me things. And once a day he gets up and walks around the offices and talks to people and says, where's my stuff? But regardless, schedule time a month from now. Start putting your priorities in place a month from now. And I'm not saying on Monday and Tuesday block your entire day. No. I'm saying put time on your calendar for email 3 times a day, half an hour. This is what I do, by the way. People ask me this all the time. Do you do what we recommend? Yes, we don't. Manager Tools and Career Tools are two podcasts. We don't teach what I do. I do what we teach because we have data on the stuff that we teach. And so you have time on your calendar for email. You have time for lunch. Something else, the first thing that should go on everybody's calendar is when they go home every night, because your family is a lot more important than work. Why would you not schedule time for your family? You don't. What so many people do is they try to get everything done during the day, and they say to themselves, well, between 5 and 7 tonight, or between 4 and 6 tonight, I'll get it done. When you're bone tired, when you're frustrated, when you're frazzled, when you're not creative, when you're not fresh, when your mind is not clear and crisp. So schedule a time to go home. And what will happen is you can make every night a vacation. Remember I talked about vacation earlier. You can schedule, leave the office at 5:30. I know, Francis, you're probably within 10 years of my age, and if that's true, you may have kids. I had 3 kids. My kids are all grown now, and I used to coach Little League. I would say, look, on this Thursday, I have to leave the office at 3:30 because I'm going to coach my son or my daughter in Little League or in soccer. Now, how is that possible if we're all so busy? Well, people will forgive you for that if you talk to them about it in advance, if you schedule it, and if you continue to get your work done. So we recommend a hard stop at the end of each day. Pick that time. Now, you could pick one day during the week that you go late, maybe 6 or 6:30, because your boss likes to stay late. If that's talk to your spouse about when that day should be. Those other days, set a hard stop and tell yourself, I don't have any extra leeway. I have to be crisp. I have to move quickly here because I'm going home at 5:30 because my spouse and my children are so far, they so far outrank what I do at work,
right,
that it's not worth saying between 5 and 7 I'm going to sit around and try to catch up. And then also schedule time, maybe an hour and a half in the morning, maybe an hour and a half in the early afternoon, where you have time every day to get your primary accomplishments done. When people start, a month from now, when your schedule starts coming into play, the one you've been planning for, people will have to schedule around your priorities.
It's having your life go the way you say, as opposed to
exactly
just having it bounce around and get caught up
and whining about it. Yes.
Yeah, yeah, and then complaining.
Yes.
You know, what strikes me about everything that you said is the context that it comes in, which is really, really that of an executive. Because executives are the ones who are struggling with the last 4 hours per week. You know, what do I do with the 4 hours, that little piece that I have at the end where it's still not scheduled. I don't want to give it away. How should I use it the best? Because their commitments are so sharp.
Yeah.
They have to be where they have to be.
Yeah.
They make plans way into the future. So they view, as you said in one of your podcasts, their free time is not really free time.
Right.
It's actually very, very important time.
Yeah. So I have two recommendations. You know, Francis, I have to tell you, that's one of the best questions I've ever been asked. Nobody asked this question. And it's really where you can find gold. And there are two things to do with that time. First of all, leave it unscheduled. And second of all, dedicate it to relationships. I must tell you, when people schedule their weeks and their months, and I look at them, the higher you get up in the organization, the more it takes other people to help you get things done. You know, Horstman's first law is it's all about people. And I know so many executives who were managers and who were very effective and good at their jobs, and then they got to be a senior person, and they realized they didn't really have any friends. And I'm not suggesting friends maybe is the right word, but they hadn't built relationships across the organization. And when you get to the top of the organization, it's all about relationships. The senior team, we joke that if you look up to the executives in your organization and it frustrates you, don't understand why they do what they do. When you look up at the top, what you call politics, those executives call collaboration. And if I had...
Trust building.
Exactly. And you know how you build trust? You go and sit down in another person's office and visit for 15 minutes. You walk out to your team and say, hey guys, how's it going? You say, anybody got any questions? If you have an office, you walk out of your office, you grab an extra chair, you sit in the middle of the cubicles and say, hey, anybody need me for anything? Or yes, you kneel down next to somebody and say, hey, how's it going? Now we would all...
What do you think about this vision?
Exactly. What do you think? Or, hey, tell me why I'm wrong. Right now, obviously, you have to have built enough of a relationship that your people aren't scared of you. But yeah, leave those 4 or 5 hours, leave them for relationship building, and say to yourself, okay, I've got an hour free here. It's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm not going to do any email. I'm going to walk around and say hi to people. I'm going to walk through my team. I'm going to say hello to everybody. I'm going to walk over and talk to the guy in finance that I haven't seen in a while, other than in meetings. And then I'm going to walk back through my team again and see how everybody's doing. And what will be amazing is people will say 3 months after you start doing that, he or she is the most accessible executive I've ever worked with. And all it is taking advantage of putting a price, a priority on relationships. And
so true. I read a book a long time ago from a therapist, a marriage therapist, and his recommendation was blunt. He said, if you want to save your marriage, spend 15 hours a week minimum with your spouse face-to-face, without the TV going or without going to the movies, where you could actually talk. And, of course, you can imagine that his advice kills people. They're like, you got to be kidding me, 15 hours? Who finds 15 hours? Nobody does. And he says, when you're dating, you have no problem.
You create,
when you're having an affair, you have no problem.
Yeah.
But now you have a problem.
Exactly.
Want to have a marriage? Put the time in. And there's no way to put the time in if they don't follow the technique that you're describing.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that. The thing we're most famous for at Manager Tools is recommending that every manager do a weekly half-hour sit-down face-to-face with each of his or her directs. At one point, at Procter & Gamble, I had 26 directs. 26. Okay. And I had a half an hour every week with each one of them. It becomes how you manage, because what most people start doing is managing their tasks rather than first managing their priorities and then developing relationships. Relationships matter. They matter so much. The higher you go, the further you go in your career, the easier things should be because the more people trust you. But the only way you're going to develop trust is to sit down and talk to people. So that's what I would do with those 4 or 5 free hours. And I know a lot of executives who say, the reason I'm where I am is because I've been surrounded by good people who are willing to help me when I needed help. And that just takes investment of time.
Well, I can't believe our time is up.
Oh.
But I've been furiously scribbling, taking notes on the thing you said. Focus on scheduling your priority tasks first, and then your relationships, then your email, and then everything else after that.
Yep. You got it.
Great. Mark, how can people get a hold of you, get more information, tune into your podcast? Where can they find all the information that you have available?
So, of course, we're at managertools.com or manager-tools.com. We have 2 podcasts, Manager Tools and Career Tools, both of which you can find on iTunes. We're the number one business podcast in the world. We have 150,000 listeners every week all over the world. Our shows have been downloaded, I think, 150 million times over the last 8 years. And you can send email to me, mahorstman@manager-tools.com. And if we can help, probably there's a podcast that I can refer them to, and all of our podcasts are free. We want to help. Our mission is to make every manager effective and to make every professional productive. And sometime before I die, I hope to see that on the horizon.
My God, how many podcasts are there on your site?
Oh, 700 or 800.
I only knew of mine. Mind Tools. I don't know of Career Tools.
Career Tools is for people who are not managers, and we've talked a good deal about priorities and scheduling over on Career Tools. Yeah, yeah.
Oh my God, you've been hiding all the good stuff. Mark, it's been a pleasure having you here at the Two-Time Labs, and you will be back because you will be invited back, and I'm sure our listeners got a great deal of value. I know I did because I can look at the piece of paper I have in front of you. It's filled with notes. And thank you so much for spending your time with us here at the Two-Time Labs podcast.
Anytime, Francis. You've been a great host, and I had a ball. I love talking about how we can make people more effective.
Great. Thanks a lot, Mark. Take care.
My
Until
pleasure.
Next time, this is Two-Time Labs podcast, signing off.